Okay, Tim, will you show them the slide that we forgot to show earlier? Tim is my rock star assistant today.
Tim.
Yeah, Tim. Give Tim a hand. I cannot believe we forgot to talk about this slide earlier. It just like flew through. I don't know why. But if you weren't here in the first session, this is what you missed. We talked about the importance of tending to the climate of your ministry. So when you ignore the climate, when you ignore the kind of the things that are going on, the culture of your place, you can produce some serious hot sauce. So anyway, that's the summary of session one. If you have questions, you can ask Tim. All right. So this is the second session. I mentioned earlier that these two things really go hand in hand. First, we always talk about the climate first, because if you don't talk about the climate first, then everything that you try to do in this area is not going to be as effective. So that's why climate comes first. We have to make sure we do climate first, and then we move into the infrastructure, laying the foundation. So the architecture really is referring to the structure, the systems, all of the things that... This is the session that you might fall asleep in, right? I'm going to try really hard for you to not fall asleep, but it's that all of those behind-the-scenes things that need to happen for the ministry to be sustainable. Before we jump in, I have a question for you to ask your friend next to you. This is the million-dollar question for the day. So for climate, we asked what was the weather report at your church or in your ministry area, and so to talk about the foundation or the structure. Now I want you to think about the dance floor. And here's the analogy. Imagine if you were a dancer. I'm not. I know that's really shocking that you can't imagine me as a dancer, but... imagine you were a dancer and you got out there to do your performance and you were responsible for paying attention to everything on the floor. And oh, by the way, you're also supposed to sell the tickets to your performance to get people in the door, and you're supposed to usher them to their seats, and you're supposed to collect the money, and you're supposed to get the costumes ready, and. Okay? So when you get out to perform, what kind of dance floor do you have? Are you dancing on a floor that has been tended to and is solid, or are you dancing on something that might have some rotted out wood or something that hasn't been attended to because you were selling tickets and trying to get people in their seats and yada yada? So think about the dance floor that you dance on in your ministry and talk to the person next to you about what kind of foundation do you have. Does that make sense? Okay. If you haven't had a chance to switch.
We had a balcony session at lunch.
Great.
We solved. We had an immediate problem on this Wednesday night.
Yes.
Okay, because we're having a big ice cream sundae party for the kids to celebrate the beginning of summer.
Okay, a ritual.
By ritual, exactly. And we couldn't figure out who was going to scoop the ice cream, who was going to do the lessons, you know, because we have some people on vacation and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. We brainstormed, and voila.
I just got chills.
Isn't that awesome?
That's awesome. Good job.
Very excited.
That is so cool. Love it. All right, who would like to share their dance floor with us? Who wants to tell us about their dance floor? Come on.
We have some really good boards that aren't necessarily always connected.
Really good boards, but they're not always connected. Okay, interesting. So what does that mean?
I just laughed. Oh. We have some really excellent kids. Excellent kids and excellent people right now working towards the connection to be one.
Excellent kids, excellent people, but we need to be more connected and have one floor. So if we step on one board, it might flip up because it's not connected to the next one. It might hit us in the face. Possible. Okay. Yeah.
I think our issue is I'm trying to break dance and they would rather have ballet.
Oh. Well, isn't that interesting? You want to break dance, they want ballet. Something like that, or some other dance. No, you know what? That's a great analogy. Sometimes in ministry, we get into a position and we think they've hired us to do the thing we're gifted at, and all of a sudden we get up there and we do it, and they go, "No, that's not what we wanted. We didn't hire you for that." So yeah, no, that's. I don't know if that is more in a joking tone or if that was more of a serious thing.
Well, it's a little bit of both.
Yeah. But it's something to pay attention to. And I think you can break dance and ballet. You could create this awesome hybrid. Maybe. Who knows? But we'll talk about how we could maybe get you dancing the right dance for everybody. Anyone else? Okay, here's a fun little video clip for you, just to kind of give a visual of what if we weren't tending to the dance floor in ministry, what would happen to our dancers? Okay, so that's really funny, right?
Yeah.
But do you see how there is a connection to ministry? And how when that happens in ministry, it's not funny. It's not something that we want to laugh about. When we see a person out there trying to do something so amazing and they fall and crack their head or break their leg. And sometimes in church when that happens, we say, "Oh, it's okay. We're going to get her off the stage." And you just go, "And we'll okay, can we get the next one please? Next staff person please come on in." And we set up our ministry people for this. And I'm here to tell you that we have got to be really careful that we are tending to the climate and providing and building the infrastructure so that these ministry leaders don't fall and crash on the floor. Because it's not, we just need to get another one in. We have to recognize that there are people out there that have incredible gifts and talents, and it's not always their fault when the floor has a hole in it or isn't connected. The most incredible dancer can't dance on a floor that's rotten, right? So we have to recognize that. So that's what we're going to talk about today. My boss and the founder of Ministry Architects, who is an incredible, brilliant man, if you ever get to meet him, it'll be the best day of your life, Mark DeVries, he wrote a book called Sustainable Youth Ministry, and one of the things that he talks about in this book that we're talking about this afternoon is this: the importance of giving the attention to the right things. What far too many churches and ministries are missing is the ability to give their first attention to ensuring that the right systems, priorities, and infrastructure are in place before beginning the dance. So before we have the program, before we have the event, before we have whatever we're going to do, we have all of the things in place on the back end, underneath, the behind the scenes, the foundation, the concrete, figured out. How many people can say, raise your hand if you can say that you have some area of your ministry where you've got the foundation completely laid, meaning I know what my lesson is for 3 weeks or more from now. Another way to say, I have all the volunteers I need, right? I know what the purpose of this program is, and everything we do is coming from a place of trying to implement that purpose. So if we pay attention to those things first, we're moving into the direction of sustainability. Because we've also tended to our climate, we have a healthy climate, we're moving from healthy climate to healthy infrastructure. All right, this is also something we talked about this morning, content thinking, moving from content thinking to systems thinking. So if you weren't here this morning, what we mean by this is we're trying to put our trust in the leadership, in the expectations, and ownership of the ministry beyond just one person, beyond the staff person making the decision. So if you have a problem, we talked this morning about Sunday school, if we don't have enough kids in Sunday school, well, there's all kinds of problems. And actually, somebody mentioned to me after the first session, behavior problems, right? Sometimes we have kids that have behavior problems, maybe because they're on the spectrum, maybe because they're just ornery. But I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. When you've got a kid or multiple kids in a room and they are just making it difficult for everybody, right? We actually had a group of junior hires one time. We took them to Wisconsin to a summer camp. And I was back at the church, but on staff, so kind of in conversation with the staff that week. And I get a phone call that some of our junior high boys had peed in water guns and were shooting people.
Yeah.
Those were our kids. So we had to figure out what to do with that real quick, because they were probably going to get kicked out of the camp. So content thinking would be, I mean, well, obviously one thing is just to say you're done, get out of here, right? Like that, we got to remove the problem, you are the problem. We decided, instead of removing the children, we took away the water guns, obviously, but instead of removing the children from the camp, we actually, in the course of 12 to 18 hours, found three adults, that we flew up there from Nashville, flew them to Chicago, and then had somebody meet them there, and took them to the camp in Wisconsin, and their job for the next 4 days was to make sure that those boys kind of stayed on the right track. We didn't say anything specifically to the boys. I mean, obviously the boys were a little bit reprimanded for their antics. But it wasn't like, now these guys are here to make sure that you do what you're, you know, we said, you know what, we're just gonna add some presence. And two of the guys were like 6'4", 275. I mean, not that we purposely picked really large men, but it just worked out that way. And wouldn't you know, we didn't have any other trouble the rest of that week. Just the presence of those men was enough for those boys to recognize that they needed to stop what they were doing. So we created a system in that week where we said, all right, your responsibility is just to stand outside the door and make sure they don't run away, right? Yeah. Or your job is to just be a presence. And we're creating kind of this web around them, and we're not totally directly dealing, I mean, we dealt with it, but we're not saying, here are all the reasons why you're in trouble. So we're moving away from content thinking to systems thinking. We want to try to initiate change not focused on the problem. So here's another analogy to that. When you're on an airplane, it's probably not the best time to try to go for a run.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could, but you're not going to get very far, right? If you run up and down the airplane, you're in a container. I guess you could technically go the distance if you just kept going back and forth. But when we focus on the content, when we focus on the problem, it's like running on an airplane. We're boxing ourselves in. We've got to think about it from what can we do around the problem that will help us move in the direction we want to go. So when we think about the ministry, we want to think about the fact that we should not expect our staff person to do everything. I think there's only one person that can do the job of what we sometimes put on staff people, and that's Jesus. I think Jesus could probably do all of these things, but he's not going to be at your church in this capacity anytime soon, I don't think. So how do we staff our ministries? And not staff meaning paid staff, just in terms of volunteers, lay leaders, and staff people who are paid. How do we create a sustainable model for ministry? We need three different kinds of people or groups of people. We need to think about this. We use the building analogy, ministry architects, get it? The laborer, this is the person or the people who have a very specific role. Name something in building that you would consider a laborer.
Hot carrier. Yeah.
Say that again.
Hot carrier. Carries the mortar mix.
Yes. I have no idea what that is, but okay. Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you. What's another one?
Concrete mixer.
Concrete mixer, yeah.
The grunt.
What's that?
The grunt. Yeah.
Think about then when we get to the part where they're inside the house, the plumber,
the electrician.
Those are very specific roles, so we wouldn't ask the plumber to come and mix concrete,
right.
And we wouldn't ask the guy to mix the guy that mixes concrete or gal to do the plumbing. They're very specific about what their role is, and they know what they do, and they know the timing of it. They know when they're supposed to be a part of the build. We need people like that in ministry. We need Sunday school teachers. We need small group leaders. We need youth group leaders. We need very specific role, people playing very specific roles, right? In addition to that, we need a general contractor, though. We need somebody or some people to have a sense of the schedule and the timing and how it all works together. You don't necessarily need your Sunday school teacher to be the person that's coordinating the Wednesday night small group. Maybe they're good at both. But we want to share the load and recognize that someone that has this skill set, the general contractor skill set, is different than teaching or leading. And this person is usually pretty good at organization and delegation and communication. In addition, you need to have an architect, a group of people, or a person that is responsible for the vision, for the blueprint. And so this person or people, these are the folks that are the dreamers. They tend to think outside the box really easily. This is my boss, Mark DeVries. I'm the general contractor, he's the visionary, and he drives me crazy, right? Because I'm very organized and I want to get things done. And he wants to blow everything up. But those are important people to have. And I recognize how important it is to have these kind of people on your team, because if you don't have the visionaries, the architects, then things can get stale and not change. And we want to make sure that we're allowing ourselves to be innovative too. So those three things, those three types of people together is what you can do for sustainable ministry: the laborer, the general contractor, the architect. Sustainable ministries are led by people who don't try to be all three. A lot of times in church we see the staff person is providing the vision, the architect is managing everybody, and is also teaching, leading, yada yada in the setting of the weekly programs. You may have someone on your team, or there may be somebody out there that has gifts in all three of these areas, but like I said before, it's really rare that someone really truly loves to do all three of these types of things. So the first thing to think about is, where do you fit in the three, and is your job or your ministry responsibility asking you to do more than one of these three, and how can you share the load with others so that we're creating a sustainable model. Control documents, this is really where it's just not flashy, but it's so important. It's so important to have all these things written down. Things like a directory. And when I say a directory, I don't mean we have this database, and if I ask the secretary, she might be able to pull me the names, and then when I look at the names, I'll realize that about 40% of them are accurate, and 20% of them, the emails work. No, we mean you have an accurate understanding of who your kids are in your church, active and inactive, with updated information That is accurate. Their phone numbers, their email addresses, their birthdays, their, you know, parents' names, all of that, that you can hand to somebody in a written form or an electronic form. Very few churches that I talk to actually have this where they could hand it to me within the hour. It's the, you know, oh yeah, I think we've got something, or you could use the church one, or, but we want to have that information ready. And you, I would include your volunteers in there as well. Calendar, this is another one that's a challenge for folks. 12-month calendar is actually what should be up there. Not your calendar for May, not your calendar for June, your calendar for the next year. Right now, it's May 20th, so we're at the end of May. It would be really good for you to have your school calendar done at this point for 2017-2018. So thinking about what are all of the things that you're going to do next year, having them down on paper. And for summer, we usually suggest January or February. Get ahead of yourselves, and you'll recognize that a lot of parents already know when school starts, right? Their fall sports schedules are probably going to be coming out soon. So in a way, we have to do it for the fact that we're competing with other activities. But also, it's not just that. It's back to that earlier this morning we talked about telling the story. When you have a calendar that's 12 months out, you're telling a story that you're organized and that you have a sense of what you're doing for the year. But here's the deal. If you publish the calendar, you have to actually do what's on the calendar. You can't publish it and then cancel something. So when you're making your calendar, you really have to make sure that you are going to do what's on there. And so that when it's published, that's your commitment to saying this is gonna happen. Because when we cancel things, then that tells a story too. So we have to recognize that we're telling a story by the publishing of the calendar, how much we're publishing, and if it gets canceled or not. Recruiting template, this is referring to volunteers. So I can share this with you later. We don't have a ton of time to go into it, but the idea is in order to get enough volunteers, in order to get more than enough volunteers, we have a very intentional process that we encourage churches to use. And the kind of summary version is come up with a list of potential people that's about 3 times the size of your ministry. So if you've got 20 kids, then you should have 60 names. When you come up with your list of 3 times the amount, then you're going to name all of the needs that you have in your ministry, all the different things that you need volunteers for. Then you're gonna go to that list, what we call the fishing pond, and you're going to look at each individual and you're gonna say, where would we like to fit them in? What need do we have that we could ask them about? So you're matching people up. And then you're calling them, or you're asking them face to face. It's very important that we do not try to recruit people by email or text. You can try, and if you know them really well, they might say yes. But if you don't know them very well, it's a lot easier for them to say no thanks, or I'm busy, or I don't know what I'm doing next week, sorry. So we want to use face-to-face communication or phone call communication when we recruit. And then you smile and dial, and you just keep asking people until the 20 you need say yes, or the 5. 9 out of 10 will say no, and you have to think of it as the more no's I get, the quicker I get no's, the quicker I'm getting to that yes that's gonna pop up somewhere. So don't consider no a failure, consider no helping you move forward. And like I said earlier, if you haven't contacted everyone in your church, then you haven't called enough people. Once you've called everyone in your church, then we can figure out a new system, but I haven't had that happen yet. So that's the $100 challenge. I know we're not supposed to gamble,
yeah,
but I will give you $100, and I'm not kidding. If you email me and want to learn more of the specifics about the recruiting template, and you follow it, and it doesn't work, I will give you $100. And we say that to people all over the country, and no one's ever actually called us and asked for $100. So that either means they didn't believe us and think that it would actually come true, or it's working the way that we're asking people to try to recruit. So there's your $100 challenge. The curriculum template, this is the last one on here. This is referring to If you have a Sunday school program, a Wednesday night program where you have curriculum involved, we would encourage you to have a 12-month plan, at least. So right now, you would know what you're teaching next year every week in 2017, 2018 in that school year. Not just the topics, but the actual curriculum that you could hand to your volunteers. Or that, so, you know, for people who are writing their own curriculum, this sounds a little bit like a hairy monster, because that means you have to write all your curriculum ahead of time. But we would really encourage you to think about it from the perspective of getting it done ahead of time. Summer is a really good time to get ahead on curriculum and get that all figured out. And then be able to hand that over to volunteers and notebooks with all the curriculum for every week. Again, you're telling a story. You're letting your volunteers know that you have done all of this planning and you're giving it to them ahead of time so that they can look at it if they want to. Most of them probably won't, but they could look at it ahead of time if they want to. So if you really got motivated, or if you were already at that place where you have a 12-month curriculum plan, then we would say, well, then now let's talk about the scope and the sequence for your ages and stages. What do we want our kids to learn? What do we want them to know, to feel, and to do because of their time in our ministry? And when they're in sixth grade, do we talk about Noah, or do we talk about that in 12th grade? Or how many times do we tell them the story of Jesus and the woman at the well? You know, how often are we repeating different stories? So those are the next steps to what is the scope and the sequence of how we're introducing stories and repeating stories for them as they go through our program. It's really important to have a vision, right? This is something that we also encourage you to do. So visioning documents, we would say not just the church mission statement, although if the church mission statement works, then that's great, but we would encourage you to have a mission statement for your ministry area, for your youth ministry. And this is something that, again, you can create the climate around this by saying involve other people. If the more people who are involved in creating the mission statement, the more likely it is to stick. So if you are the one that creates the mission statement, it will stick as long as you are at the church. If you involve others at the church, it's more likely to stick a little longer. We would encourage you to have 3-year goals. And what we mean by that is maybe it's 3, 4, or 5, it's not a bunch, but that there is something that you're striving for and that you are focused in on, and you're wanting to make sure that we hit these targets. And if you've ever read any of Andy Stanley books, this one is from 7 Practices of Effective Ministry. Your ministry is perfectly designed to achieve the results you're currently getting. Another way to say that is that phrase by Albert Einstein, doing something over and over again, expecting different results, is insanity. When we want to see change, when we want to imagine something different, we have to set goals for ourselves and for our ministry areas. And again, the more people you get involved in this, the more collaboration you have, the more likely it is to happen. When goals are set by leaders and then are told to people, all of the weight, all of the ownership is on the person that set them. When you get a group of people together, it's more complicated and it takes longer. But when you get a large group of people together to create those goals, they feel a sense of the ownership. You can get others involved in that way. We would encourage you to have a set of values. And my guess is you have values, right? We're all Christians. We have values. But have you named them? Can your kid, if we asked your youth or your volunteers at your church, what are the values at fill in the blank church? What are the values in your youth ministry? Would they all say the same thing? Or would they say what they think it is? We want to encourage you to have a set of values that you name, 3 to 5 or maybe 6 values that you say, this is what we are about. And the values are the spirit in which you do the ministry. You know, McDonald's has values. What are some of McDonald's values? What do you think of when you think of McDonald's? Cheap. What else?
Consistent.
Consistent. Yeah. Fattening. Fast. What's that?
Friendly.
I will add kid friendly to that. My children, anytime I ask them where they want to eat, they want to go to McDonald's. I don't know how that happened, but they did something. McDonald's has done something, right? So they're fast, they're consistent. They have a set of values, and we know them. terrorist groups have a set of values, mm-hmm. right? ISIL has a set of values. They're very dedicated to their cause. They're very loyal. They're very focused. So the values that we have is the spirit in which we are doing whatever it is we want to do. When we have a set of values that we name in our ministry, we're saying to our leaders, to our volunteers, this is who we are, and this is who we encourage you to be. And it goes back to, if we can identify who we are and allow people to all know that at the beginning, you're preventing yourself from having any confusion on the back end. Organizational chart. It sounds easy, but in ministry, it actually can get really crazy. I've seen organizational charts that kind of have like a cobweb of lines going all different directions. And so it's okay, though, that it does. Just get it down on paper, whatever it is. You probably are not going to be able to use the Microsoft Word format, you know, those templates they have for organizational charge. That probably won't work for your church because you're going to have people who are in charge of things every direction and different layers. But even if you just have to write it out by hand, it's really helpful for people to see how are all these programs connected and who are the people involved. What are all the volunteer opportunities that we have? So then once we get through all of these things, it's important to remember we have to go back to them. We can't just make them and then say, okay, we're done. We did this visioning stuff. We've got it all figured out. We have our goals. We have our values. We have to reinvent and go back and revision. Did you know that the iPhone 1 is now considered like a museum artifact? It's so old. It's not that old. I can't even remember the year, but it's maybe 15 years ago. I don't know how long the iPhone's been out. Anyone know? It's 10 or 15 years. It's not much. But it's so old in the kind of world of technology that it's actually considered a relic. Apple has done a very good job of revisioning, and getting us to think that we need the next whatever it is. Before they hit their peak, they move on to the next product. So what would that look like in ministry if we did that? In ministry, we don't tend to do that very much. We tend to ride that wave until it crashes and burns, right? So if we have a new idea, a new vision, and we ride it all the way, there's a point before we get to the top where we actually should be saying, all right, it's time to really rethink this and revision. And that's that dotted line where it says decision point. So the solid line is what we tend to do in church. We tend to ride it all the way to the top, and then we slide down the hill until it drops off. And sometimes our youth staff will leave because they see it happening. They see the slide. If we can move ourselves to imagine that failure is okay and get to the place of revisioning at that decision point before we hit the slide, that's how you create new trajectories. That's how you create momentum in a new direction. That's where an innovation can really take off. So imagine if wherever you are, if you're at the point where you're starting something new now, you have to catch that decision point before you're at the peak. And again, this goes back to that, you know, church, we really, as a church, we don't want to fail, and we want to hang on to all the good stuff. So this is putting us in a vulnerable spot, because it feels like we might not be allowing ourselves to reach the most potential. We're changing things up before we get there. But we would encourage you to revision and imagine that it actually could take you in a new direction. All right, this is something that I want to show you. Actually, I'm going to let you see it first and then we'll talk.
I
All right. Any thoughts on how that might apply to what we're talking about today?
I think a lot of times you're in the middle of it thinking, oh, this is great, it's gonna keep going like that forever, and it never does.
Yeah, in the middle of it, it feels like we got a good thing going.
Yeah.
It's gonna happen forever. And then that happens, and the ball drops. Yeah. What can we do to get through the whole song? How can we survive without being the alien crushed through the floor?
More breakdancing in ballet.
More breakdancing in ballet. Yes. Be more aware of our surroundings. Mm-hmm. What else? How else can we keep that song going?
I think there's just some contrast to the song, is that we're just trying to survive. We're not looking for success, we're just trying to survive.
Oh, that's so good. It's the song, the words in the song are about surviving. So, yeah. Looking for success instead of surviving.
Don't get comfortable.
And I think, like you mentioned, the more people you have, if one goes down, you still have some others to sustain the dance.
That's right. The more people you have, when one person is taken away, it's not going to feel quite as heavy. Anything else? All right. I want you to think for a second. What is one obvious thing, one obvious change you want to make when you get back to your church? It could be something that we talked about in this session. It could be something that you thought about earlier today, something you talked about over lunch. I just want you to think about that for a minute. I want you to share that with somebody next to you. And I'm going to give you a few minutes because one of the things that I really want to make sure that we always represent at Ministry Architects is that these sessions, we want you to go back and actually implement this. This is not just the book that you take home and put on your bookshelf and it gathers dust and then you pull it out and go, oh yeah, that was from 2017. Huh, that was a good day. We want you to do the things that you feel inspired to do and that the Holy Spirit is speaking to you today. So I really want to give space and time for that. So take a couple of minutes, think about what is that one thing, that one obvious change you want to make, and then I'd like you to share it with somebody around you.
Thank you.
All right, I hope I gave you just enough time to get the conversation started, and then I'm going to pull you back. But please know that if you have any questions, if there's anything that you want to talk through more about these things or the things that you're thinking about going home and changing or working on, feel free to email me. I'm going to put up my contact info in a little bit. I'd be happy to talk through with you or brainstorm. Okay, our closing exercise for this session is around scripture. Does anyone know Proverbs 14:4? It's a really good one. I'm going to read this to you, and then I want you to, you're going to get in groups of at least three, maybe four, and I want you to kind of come up with your translation to this verse. So figure out who you're going to be with, and we're all going to get into groups of three or four or more. But here it is. Without oxen, a stable stays clean, but you need a strong ox for a large harvest. So I want you to get in groups of three or more, and I want you to come up with your translation of what that means in ministry, what that means in your setting. Okay? Go ahead. Thank you.